ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So last class we have studied some of the teachings of the Vedas. Of these there is a particular importance is about Vidya. Vidya means contemplation. In modern terminology, we can say Vidya means equivalent to our meditation. And it is a wonderful section of much importance. And what happens when we practice this contemplation? I have briefly outlined the purpose of meditation is to become like the object upon which we meditate. To put it in simple words, that means that the individual soul has to completely become one with the Supreme Soul. Jivatma Paramatma Sanyoga. That is the ultimate goal of meditation. But one cannot achieve it immediately. It is a very long, drawn-out process. It will take many, many lives. Of this type of contemplation, I have given three examples in my last class, if you remember, Sri Ramakrishna's life. One was when he wanted to see Sri Rama, he meditated upon Hanuman. Then he wanted to have the vision of Krishna, meditated upon Radha. When he wanted to make his body absolutely unmoving, immobile, he meditated upon the stony image of Kala Bhairava, which is there on the top of the Natamandira. These are just a few examples to give. Before I give you some actual examples, and I am going to give you very briefly about Om, about Gayatri, and about Sri Ramakrishna, how we can contemplate them. We have to understand that there are three types of contemplations are there, and these are called the contemplation on sound symbols, contemplation on visual symbols, contemplation on the self. So one by one we will take out. During the Vedic period, we must remember, they didn't have the modern deities like the Rama, Krishna, Vishnu. They were not having. But they selected some of the most natural symbols. The sun, the moon, the fire, the oceans, lakes, the rivers. These are called natural symbols. Now, during the Vedic period, there were two types of upasanas were known. And these were called Sampad Upasana and Adhyasa Upasana. What it is, I will have to translate it into English language. If you have to understand, I will come to it. We know an English word, a Sanskrit word, which is used also, idol worship in English, pratika. The very meaning of the pratika means to move towards. Here is a image of Krishna. And what do? We worship. When we enter the shrine, you know, what do? We prostrate. And we want to see the image, the picture, etc. The meaning of the word pratika means to go towards. Not in a physical, external sense. That means remove all the obstructions so that there is nothing left between us and the deity. That is the ultimate purpose. So this symbols are extensively used in that process. Now, during Vedic times, as I was mentioning, There were two types of upasanas or contemplations or vidyas have been in vogue, and most of them have gone out of practice today, but we've been enriched practically a million times more in the forms of icons, pictures, images, various deities, etc. It is important to understand two things here. Sampad upasana means take an inferior object, any inferior object, and superimpose upon it superior qualities of God. Examples of these are, take the stone, Shivalinga. What is a Shivalinga after all? It is a small piece of stone. Saligrama, another small piece of stone. But it is like a memorabilia. You know, suppose a mother has one son, and the son is somewhere very far away, Australia or somewhere. Or maybe he has been sent to the Mars or moon or somewhere like that. But they keep a small object, a bit of hair. Some people keep, I believe, dog's hair also. And babies, you know, babies' pictures in lockets, etc. They will put wherever they go to carry. What is the idea? Whenever they look at it, they are remembering their beloved. They want to, in a mental sense, they come very near to that. That is the idea. So this is called Sampad Upasana, means take any object. So unable to understand this secret, there are so many non-Hindu religions who criticize Hinduism. Hindus are idol worshippers. You know, they look at a tree and then prostrate. They look at the stone figure of a snake and prostrate. That I understand. But what is the meaning behind it? They are not prostrating before a piece of stone or a piece of wood. They are seeing, attributing God's qualities upon it. And if there is faith, that really God will respond through that form. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell a story. A small boy, his father used to worship God. And one day he had to go out. He told his son that you see that God is properly fed. And the boy had all faith. So he went inside, offered food and said, God, come and eat. He didn't understand that God cannot come and eat. So he went on praying, but nothing was happening, no response. He started weeping. My father told me that I have to feed you. And seeing his weeping, God came down, ate the whole food. See, be careful when you say, eat means put in brackets, leave something for me, don't eat, otherwise he will eat away the whole lot. So he ate, and afterwards when he came out, there was no prasada at all. We all belong to that group of family, you know. Where is prasada? God has eaten. And supposing, you know, you come for the worship of Holy Mother, and you only bring things, we only offer, and nothing, no prasada is given. Next time, how many of you will really come? So the family was shocked and said, where is prasada? The boy said, God came and ate. They didn't believe. Then they went and saw the whole plate was empty and they could not have eaten. Similarly, another story Sri Ramakrishna tells, you know, that of Dada Madhusudana, brother Madhusudana, etc. These are indications. These are not imaginations, because God is everywhere. That is the Vedantic theory. But we are unable to see him. So an image, a picture, an icon, these are, as it were, removers of the obstructions. That's all. So no Hindu worships an idol. He worships God, but in the form of an idol. This is a secret which most of the people do not seem to understand. This is called Sampada Upasana. That is, take an inferior object and superimpose upon it certain superior qualities of God or Goddess. The other is called Adhyasa Upasana, where you take the superior symbol. A symbol, always you must remember, is only a pointer. A symbol itself is not the actual thing. A symbol is only a representative. Take a superior symbol. What is the most superior symbol that is possible for a human being? The sun. The sun is the greatest. One day if the sun doesn't come, see what happens to you. Without the sun, this life is completely extinguished. Symbol is the direct visual representation of Brahma. Pratyaksham Brahmasi. About two, we say Pratyaksha Brahma. One is the sun, another is the Vayudevata, wind. See, because if the Vayudevata is more, even more directly present. Because if we take sleep for a minute, just see what happens. These are the two types of contemplations very much prevalent at the Vedic times. Now, in the modern upasanas, that is to say of our time, that there are two types of, again, these pratikas. Pratikas means symbols in a way of speaking. This is iconic and iconic. Iconic, you understand, icon. It could be a picture, it could be a photograph, it could be a pratima or an image. Something very visually present. Like in India, you have full of these temples, you know, various types of gods, goddesses and all those things. A picture, a photo, an icon or an image. This is called iconic. Aniconic means its opposite. It is purely symbolic. Like mandalas, yantras, you know, chakras. The Buddhists, they draw certain types of mandalas, etc. So they are the things, but if you do not know the secret, then you think they are some gibberish, doodling. It is not doodling. The great psychologist Jung had found out, he delved deep into the symbology, and at certain times he wanted to see what is the significance of this mandala. So he was capable of concentrating his mind deeply. So he concentrated and had taken a piece of paper and a pencil. Without his knowledge, a mandala was formed, because the thought which was going through his mind had automatically directed his hand to do certain things. If you know about something about psychology, then I can tell you. You see, the psychiatrist or psychologist wants to find out what is ailing his patient. So one way of doing it is free expression of speech. You know about it. He will simply utter some words. The game, like a game, you know. I utter a word. You utter another word without thinking. Then I utter another word. Then it's a kind of word game. Cat. He will say rat. Okay. Then a table, he will say chair, and then he will say stick, and he will say my aunt. What is the problem? Problem is the aunt. You know, the uppermost thought will come out automatically. In dreams also, dream reading, dream interpretation is another way. But there is another way called doodling. Have you heard about the meaning of the word doodling? Just to take a piece of paper, and we all do it. You know, so you are traveling on the aeroplane. A newspaper is there. Pen also is there. What do you think you are doing? You are doodle. Doodle means this doodling is not a meaningless type of activity. There is a meaning there. But it is up to the psychologist to find out the meaning. Then only he can find out what is the trouble with him. So these mandalas are the expressions, visual expressions of a deep mental process that has taken place in the hearts of great contemplatives. And having given that mandala, what is the secret? What do all these angles, squares and circles and all these things really represent? The guru teaches him. You know, at the time of Homa, we do this yantra, Devi yantra. There is a meaning. We also write, of course, we do it here very briefly. But if you go to the Buddhist mandala, all the alphabet will be there, different colored writings will be. It's beautiful even visually to look at. But it is not merely for visual beauty. It is for contemplating. Every part of the mandala represents a particular type of consciousness. That is the purpose. So these are what is called aniconic symbols for the contemplative purpose. Another is iconic, of which we are quite familiar. Now, in the modern times, it is necessary for us to go. All the type of contemplations we do can be divided into three parts. One is called Nama Upasana. Upasana is the name for contemplation. Nama means sound symbol. And all the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, they are initiated with a sound symbol. So this is one. Then there is what is called Rupopasana. That is to say, meditation on the form of a deity. Then there is a very beautiful type of contemplation, which is called Ahangraha Upasana. I will give some examples also of all these things. Now, first to take this Nama Upasana. Nama Upasana means there are different types of aspirants. Therefore, these three types of contemplations have developed very naturally. So, what are these three types of aspirants? The first type of aspirant is sound-oriented. You see, if you analyze, you will see some of us, we can remember sounds much better than forms. Some of us can remember faces, but not the names. Some of us can remember the names, but not the forms. Some people, they neither forms nor names, but abstract ideas come there. First to take, you know, the people who have orientation towards the sound symbol, they remember first of all the sounds very well, and they like music. Their ears are very sharp. Whereas those who are form oriented and not sound oriented, they can visualize things. They like paintings and things like that very much. But you ask them to hear a talk, they will not talk. Here also you will see there are people who attend the talks but do not come to the shrine. And there are people who attend the rituals but not attend the talks. If you ask, they will tell 100 excuses why they couldn't come. But the real fact is they are not sound oriented. They are form oriented. But ask them to see a cinema, 7 hours they will spend every day. Yeah. So visually they like these things. So they like paintings, they like beautiful nature, etc. But there are people who don't want to have sounds, don't want to have the forms, but they can think deeply. There are very few people. Fortunately for most of us, we are a combination of all these three, really speaking. Now, among those who are oriented towards Namopasana, it is also called Japa. Japa means repetition of the mantra, holy name of God given by our guru, or one also can choose from scripture. When a person takes seriously to this Nama Upasana, he has to pass through three stages. Every part of this Upasana has to pass through three stages. Okay, first let us discuss about Nama Upasana, or sound contemplation, mantra contemplation. The first stage one goes through is when we are trying to repeat the mantra, it comes out with great difficulty. A lot of effort is necessary. The mind is not fixed. It is distracted. Again and again we have to bring it back. As I was looking at a cartoon, you know, one fellow is meditating. Three parts of the cartoon. First part, one fellow is meditating, another fellow is nearby, standing. Second part, he is asking the fellow who is standing, asking the fellow who is meditating, what are you doing? And he is replying, I am meditating. I am going towards God. I am going towards God. In the third part of the cartoon, the man who is standing says, very good, God speed you. If you meet my uncle on the way, convey my good wishes to him. Meaning what? Meaning that what is, if you happen to think about 150 things, and if you happen to think about my uncle also, then you convey my good wishes to him. It's not that easy to think about God. So this is the first part. Why does it happen? You see, there is something wonderful psychological fact we have to know. You know what is the most used word in any language? Most repeated word in any language. Do you know what it is? I. Why? Because that is the most beloved name. none loves anybody else excepting oneself. That is what Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Yajnavalkya, repeatedly told Maitreyi, my dear, the husband is dear for the wife, not because of the husband, but because of the wife. This, whoever is beloved to us, that name automatically springs in our mind. Or whatever affects our I or ego deeply, that sound symbol or that picture comes to our mind immediately. Suppose somebody hurt you very badly. After that you go and sit for meditation. What do you think? Who do you think comes to your mind? Only that person. Why? Not because the person is good, because the person very badly hurt the ego. So anyway, the point I am trying to make is that which we love the most, that will come to our mind automatically. We do not to make any effort. It doesn't need any effort to think of I. Until we develop that kind of love for God, where God becomes the most beloved to us, it is not possible to remember His name automatically. But if we go on doing it, purifying our heart, correspondingly we also change our habits, bad habits into good habits, develop good qualities, our love for God also disappears. One question was asked by a devotee to Sri Ramakrishna, what is the way, sir? And he says, there are two ways. One is love of God, another is prayer. And the devotee persists further and asks, which comes first? You know what Sri Ramakrishna said? He said, love of God. Because if you don't have love of God, prayer will not come into your heart easily. The second step in the progress towards Namopasana is the mantra itself starts repeating. I think some of you have read the Way of the Pilgrim, a Russian aspirant. First his guru tells him, you repeat the mantra 1,000 times, then 2,000 times, then 5,000 times. And after some time, he says, I do not need to make any effort. The mantra repeats itself. That is the stage which is called Mantra Chaitanya. Which means the mantra has become awakened. See, suppose a person is sleeping. And you will have to do everything for him. You have to prepare tea, coffee, this, that, so many things. But when the person wakes up, then he will do it himself, excepting Indian husbands. That's when they expect their wives to do it. So mantra chaitanya takes place in the second stage because the person has developed so much purity of heart and he also, this mantra awakened, it goes on repeating itself. This is the second stage. In the third stage, there is no repetition of mantra because of that person about whom he is repeating. That person is present in front of this aspirant. Sri Ramakrishna gives an example. A drama, people went to see a drama and the curtain is there, closed. How long do they go? Then they start gossiping, isn't it? How long do they go on gossiping? As long as the curtain is not lift. As soon as curtain is lifted, Narada enters, Narayana singing about it. Immediately, all the audience falls silent because as soon as he sings, Krishna will come. When a person goes on loving God, there will come a time, devotional way of indicating, that the aspirant is seeing, having darshana of the Lord right in front of him. How long? There is no absence of the Lord. There is no absence. What does it mean? It means he sees God everywhere. This is called Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga. Seeing God in the form of the universe. If you want to see Vishnu, you have to go to Vaikuntha. If you want to see Shiva, you will have to go to Kailasa. But if you want to see the form of Lord as the universe, where do you need to go? You do not need to go anywhere because you are already in this universe. So whatever you look at is nothing but another form of God only. When a person comes to that state, then there is no separation at all between them. That is the last and final stage. These are the three stages. Whether a person contemplates sound symbol, whether a person contemplates the form symbol or whether he thinks of the God in the form of his abstract thinking. These are the three invariable stages. Now let me briefly tell you about the second type of contemplation, which is form symbols. As I said, that some people are form oriented. They like forms of God. They also decorate their homes very well. You can also understand this nature. If somebody is sound oriented, his house would be full of sounds, music, records, etc. But if somebody is form oriented, plenty of calendars, plenty of pictures, beautiful pictures, and he will also have, you know, his camcord is full of these pictures only. Videos, stacks and stacks of videos. He will have no time even to look into them because he likes them. You can more or less understand this situation. Now, how does this progress? How does this also slowly progress? You can imagine. First of all, the meditation is done with great difficulty. You see, if he looks at the face, the rest of the body disappears. If he looks at the feet, rest of the body disappears. After some time, he can see the whole picture, but it is as though lifeless picture. After some time, slowly that image seems to be moving in the mind. After some time it smiles. After some time it talks. So he lives in two worlds now. An external world where he sees all these things. Then an internal world where he sees his chosen deity. That is the second stage. And he is deeply influenced by the second stage. And then there comes a third stage. When, for him, whether he opens the eyes, closes the eyes, all that he sees is nothing but only God. For example, as I gave you last time an example, when Sri Ramakrishna saw what we call a public woman, what did he see? Mother Sita herself. And every person that is coming, every customer that is coming to that woman appeared to him as Rama, Sita, Rama, Sanyoga, or Radha Krishna, Sanyoga. That is the only thing that this person has seen, because his eyes are covered with kalirium. It's another beautiful incident. Sri Ramakrishna mentions it. Once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to some place. On the way, he had to pass a village. And that village was famous for the clay of that image used to put on a kind of, you know, drum, Indian drum, a coal. So somebody mentioned this fact to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Immediately he fell down unconscious. So it is also said, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to see the blue ocean near the Puri, Neelachala, he used to be reminded of Yamuna in Vrindavana. And many were the times when he used to go and fall unconscious in that ocean. And one version is that he actually jumped and never came back. That is one version of his passing away. These are some of the examples. Another example given is, you know, Radha was going, walking, attending to her daily chores. Suddenly she saw a particular tree which yields blue flowers. As soon as she saw the blue flower, she fell down unconscious. Why? That blueness reminded her of Sri Krishna. You know how visual symbols also affect. Most of us, we are more visual oriented than sound oriented. How do you know? You go to the shrine. You see Sri Ramakrishna. You will not do anything bad there. Will you spit there? Will you throw anything, impure, dirty thing there? You will not. But you will not mind do it in this hall there, you know. All the chocolates, they are taken and the covers are thrown here and there, everywhere. But you don't do it in the shrine. So why? Because you think Sri Ramakrishna is watching you there. Whereas he is not watching you here. So we have got that, seeing that form in that particular place has a particular effect upon our mind. What we have to understand is, it is not merely meditating on the form of the chosen deity, but it must remind us of something for which the chosen deity represents. So this is the second step, second stage in the progress of upasana, which is called Gunadhyana. Meditation on the blessed qualities of the Divine Lord. God is divided in our scriptures into two forms, Saguna and Nirguna. Nirguna means no quality, beyond name, beyond form, beyond qualities. But Saguna means form, name and auspicious qualities. It's not that God has auspicious qualities, but we need these auspicious qualities in order to approach Him, to make our mind pure. So we attribute these qualities. Really we attribute on God. But God also incarnates, comes in a human form and abundantly manifests these wonderful qualities. Say for example, you meditate upon Sri Ramakrishna. What is the first thing that you notice if you really meditate upon Sri Ramakrishna? What is that quality in Sri Ramakrishna which attracts you? Alright, that is a bit difficult question. What is it that attracts you to Holy Mother? Unconditional love. It is not merely love. It is unconditional love. That means, you know what is unconditional love? That we have a self-image of ourselves. And we know how good we are. Whatever may be our photographs, you know, CV photographs. But inside we know what we really are. We have a very good idea of it. But we know that when we approach a being like Holy Mother, it doesn't matter what we are. Because her love doesn't take notice of any of our defects. Whatever we may be, she will accept us 100%. If you are a saint, she will accept you, of course. If you are a sinner also, would she accept or not? She will accept. It is this which attracted people to her. Now you see, what is that quality which you should meditate Holy Mother with? Love. If you go on thinking of Holy Mother, not merely visualizing her, but as an embodiment of love, what are you really thinking about? What are you thinking about? You know, these are wonderful things to understand. Suppose you are thinking of, let us say, a person. And do you think of that person as he is? No. You always think of that person with some, I like him, because he is all, whenever I see, he sees me, he smiles me, and he brings me, you know, I make fun of devotees, you know. There are two types of devotees. One type of devotees, they are pranam devotees. They only make pranams, nothing else. The other type of devotees are called pranami devotees. They not only make pranams, they also give pranami. Whom do you think I like more? Whenever we see a person or any object, we never look at that object impersonally, impartially. We always look with some kind of preconceived ideas, either raga or dvesha, like or dislike, because of certain qualities. So whenever we think of that person, that quality comes to the foremost. You think of a terrorist. What is the idea that comes to you? This should be an easy question to answer. It doesn't need any deep thinking. A terrorist means one who creates terror in you, is it not? That quality, but can you separate the person from the terror? If you can do that, you are a real contemplative. But usually, we think of that, but then it creates the reaction. But the point we are discussing, whenever an aspirant thinks of the form of the Ishtadevata or chosen deity, always certain auspicious qualities must be meditated upon. See Ramakrishna, for example, there is a dhyana mantra. Hridaya kamala madhye rajitam nirvikalpam, etc. When we meditate upon Sri Ramakrishna, we should be able to meditate in that way. I will come to that point later on. First stage is to visualize a dead picture. When an aspirant progresses, then that image, picture of that is chosen deity is no longer, it is dead. It is alive. It talks, it smiles, it does everything. This is called Bhava Samadhi. Ramakrishna used to have lots of these visions. But that is not the highest stage, because there is still a lot of separation between the aspirant and the chosen deity. What is the ultimate goal of contemplation, as I mentioned earlier? To bring about complete union between the individual self and the Supreme Self, between the devotee and the God. There should be not the least bit of separation. Is in Sanskrit, this term is Tailadharavat Avichinnaha. Like the pouring of the oil, there should be no gap at all. This is also called Samadhi. These are the two types. There is a third type. The third type is called Swarupa contemplation. Contemplation. Some people like to contemplate upon God in God's real nature. Of course, really God is beyond all forms, all qualities, all thinking. No speech can express, no thought can express God. But still we have been given certain hints. What are those hints? There are two famous sentences in our scriptures. One sentence is Sat Chit Ananda. God should be meditated upon as Sat, as Chit, and as Ananda. And the second most beautiful is Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Satyam means truth, Jnanam means pure consciousness, Anantam means infinity. Now, Satchidananda, just briefly we'll do. Sat means what? Existence, pure existence, not manifestation. For example, here are two objects made out of wood. Here is a table, here is a chair. Both are, the table and the chair are manifestations of existence, but not existence. What is the pure existence? Wood. So that wood will always remain, but the manifestation can be destroyed, can be changed. Similarly, chitta also has two aspects. What are those aspects? One is pure consciousness. Another is this pure consciousness is, as it were, encapsulated in the form of an object. Suppose I am seeing you. Then what happened? My pure consciousness, has taken the form of this particular object. For example, you see a cinema. Before the film is inserted, what do you see on the screen? Pure light. But as soon as the film starts passing through, what do you see on the screen? But what are all those figures on the screen? It is nothing but various manifestations of the light, pure light. It is nothing but light. Okay, these two aspects are there. Similarly, Ananda also has got two aspects. When Ananda means what? Bliss. The nature of God is Ananda, pure bliss. But when we do not see, to put it in a ironical way, when we see God in the form of a rasagulla, then that is called pleasure. So what happened? The bliss is manifesting now in the form of pleasure. That means what? It has become limited. It has become limited. Sat also becomes limited. Chitta also becomes limited. Ananda also becomes limited. But a devotee, and every devotee must do this, ultimately, whether we take this door of sound symbols or the door of visual symbols, but in the ultimate run, we have to go both beyond names and forms and qualities, that means beyond sounds and beyond visual forms. Then what happens? There we have to meditate abstractedly on Sat, on Chit, and on Ananda. These are the three steps. The first step is with effort, great difficulty. The second step is it becomes so spontaneous and also becomes very natural. Also, we cannot do without that. The last step is there is nothing to separate the aspirant from the ultimate self, ultimate reality. They become completely one. Keep this in mind whenever we think of these vidyas. Now come back, I said I will give you three examples very briefly. The first example is, let me give the example of Om. Omkara in Vedic symbology, in fact it is called the essence. And Sri Ramakrishna confirms it. You know what he says? That a person who has seen God, he doesn't need to go any ritual, Sandhya Vandana. So what he says? The Sandhya merges in Gayatri. And the Gayatri merges in Om, he says. The Sandhya means what? Rituals. Sandhya means, you know, you wash your hands and you purify your mouth, etc. That is called
Sandhya Vandana. Then, what is the important part of the Sandhya Vandana? Repetition of Gayatri Mantra. It is Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri means here Gayatri Mantra. It is a big mantra. It consists of 24 letters. That is why it is called Gayatri Chandas. What is the essence of these 24 letters? Om. One has to contemplate upon Om. Why I have taken particularly this particular Gayatri Mantra? Because if at all there is national mantra of India, that is Gayatri Mantra. Like, you know, national flag, national flower, national bird. So there is a national mantra. What is that mantra? Not Vande Mataram. Gayatri Mantra. It is the most ancient mantra in the whole world. Thousands of years old. No mantra is not Christian mantra, not Buddhist mantra. You know why? When was Christianity, when was Judaism started? Few thousand years ago. When was Christianity started? 2000 years ago. When did Islam start? Only about 1600 years ago. When was Buddhism started? Only 2600 years back. So you see, Gayatri Mantra is the oldest. And it, even today, millions repeat this Gayatri Mantra. What is the essence of this Gayatri Mantra? Om. So if you can contemplate on Om, then you can't, it is equivalent, more than equivalent, on contemplating upon any mantra. Because Om is the foundational mantra symbol for every mantra, you can say that. This symbol or syllable Om consists of three parts. Rather, I would say three and half parts. What are those three? A, U, and M. Without vowel, only the consonant ma, m, om, om, like that, right? What is the half part? The half part which is the most important part. What is that half part? That is called m. That is inaudible sound. Sri Ramakrishna says, you know, when you strike a gong, that happens, bum. There comes a time when you can't hear it, but it's still, the vibration still continues. Now, why is it important? These are, say, let us say, four parts are there. Four parts. How do we contemplate? Here is the beauty. Simply, you might never have heard it. This whole universe, infinite number of objects are there. But all these infinite number of objects are contained, or the whole world is divided, universe is divided, according to Hinduism, into three parts. You know what they are called? Bhuhu, Bhuvaha, Suvaha. Bhu means this earthly planet. Suvaha means the heavenly planet. And in that which is in between these two is called Bhuvaha. Bhuhu, Bhuvaha, Suvaha. When you are contemplating upon this Omkara, A is to be identified with Bhuhu, this world. U is to be identified with Bhuvar Loka, in between world. And Suvaha is to be identified with Ma, Makara, A, O and Ma. Right? And that which is beyond this created universe is to be identified with the last part, at inaudible sound. This is one part. Then we have got three states of existence. The waking, the dream, this deep sleep, and there is another state which is called Turiya, Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti and Turiya. So the A part, first part of Omkara is to be identified with waking state. The U is to be identified with the dream state. The M is to be identified with the deep sleep state. And that which is beyond these three, which sustains, pervades and sustains these three, which is called Turiya Avastha. Turiya is not a fourth state. Turiya is, it is Turiya, which is expressing in the form of waking, dream and dreamless. And that is to be identified with that inaudible sound. I am only making the sound. Actually, it is not audible sound. Similarly, we also have got three bodies. The gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. A is to be identified with the gross body. O is to be identified with the subtle body. And is to be identified with the causal body. And that which is beyond these three is to be identified with contemplate Omkar. I am only giving you a few hints like that. If you can do that, then you will absolutely, you will go beyond, because it is these three door steps, as it were. One leads to the subtle, subtle leads to this causal. Causal leads you to the ultimate reality. Now, this is the essence of Gayatri. Exactly, it is the same thing. How? Gayatri has got three padas or three parts. What are those three parts? What is the first part? Tat Savitirvaranyam Bhargo Devasya. That is the first part which we have to identify with this world. Tat Savitirvaranyam is the first part. Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi is the second part. Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat is the last part. Identify them with Jagrat, waking, dream, deep sleep. Immediately also identified with this world. That's why we utter Om Bhuv Bhuvah Suvah. Om Bhuv Bhuvah Suvah. Then Tat Savitirvaranyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat. So identify those last three parts with Bhuv Bhuvah and Suvah. Identify these three, Bhuv Bhuvah and Suvah, with A, O and Ma. And identify these three with that last Omkara. And if you can do that, then you have reached the ultimate reality. This is the secret of the Gayatri Mantra. Sri Ramakrishna says, Sandhya Marjasin, Gayatri, Gayatri Marjasin, Om, and the Om Marjas takes you to the highest reality. So this is either Omkara or Gayatri Upasana. It doesn't matter which Upasana you do. It doesn't matter which deity you worship. But this is the way to completely from the multiplicity to the unity, from diversity to the unity, from the many to the one. This is the process of slowly becoming work. This is called Samadhi state. Now very briefly I will tell you how Sri Ramakrishna is to be worshipped. Now Sri Ramakrishna, you know, we have got a Dhyana Mantra. What is that Dhyana Mantra? Hridaya Kamala Madhye Rajitam Nirvikalpam, etc. is there. Sada sada khila bheda atitam eka swarupam prakruti vikruti shunyam nityam ananda murtim vimala paramahamsam Ramakrishnam bhajama. I will take only one as a sample. There are three verses, but I will take only one. Shining in the lotus of the heart assuredly, beyond all changes, real and unreal, one and compact, untouched by nature, or her evolutes, the eternal image of bliss, the spotless swan supreme, we adore Ramakrishna. It goes. Now when we meditate upon Ramakrishna, this is what we are supposed to do. This is called Ahangraha Upasana. I mentioned three types of contemplations. What are those? Meditation, contemplation on the sound symbols, contemplation on the visual or form symbols. What was the last one? Ahangraha means, aham means I. Graha means to grasp. As it were, a small person is grasping the hand of a bigger person, and that bigger person is carrying the smaller person along with him. A small leaf falls into the stream of a river. What does the river do? It carries that leaf along with it too. This is what Sri Ramakrishna says. Somehow or other, cling to the father, a small boy. And he takes hold of his father's hand. So the father takes him, or mother takes him. Though there is a higher state where he doesn't do any effort, but the father himself does. But in the beginning we have to do that. It's in the beginning we are all monkeys. Later on we become like kittens. So ultimately it will take us to the highest reality, as it were. So in this case, we will have to meditate on the Sri Ramakrishna in this form. These are the Dhyana Mantra, meditational mantras. Every deity in Hindu pantheology has got his own meditational form. Mahakali, Dhyana. Here she has got four hands. In one hand a sword, another hand she has got a skull, etc. Why are these given? These are symbols so that we can contemplate on the real nature of this deity, and these deities are nothing but the manifestations of the ultimate reality, by holding on to them, along with them, we also go and become merged with the ultimate reality in the end. So when the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, and you can take any deity for example, this is called Ahangraha Upasana. All of us have got to remember this. Where is the Lord sitting? Not somewhere. Where is he sitting? Shining in the lotus of the heart. The heart itself is to be imagined as a lotus, and in that lotus he is there. And then what is beyond all changes? Sri Ramakrishna never changes. Irrespective of how we feel emotionally, in our pure consciousness, you are sometimes happy, sometimes unhappy. But there is something witnessing these changes, is it not? Who is that witnessing reality? That witnessing reality is called pure consciousness. And that another name for that pure consciousness is Ramakrishna, Krishna, Christ, Buddha, whatever name you choose to give. Right? Nirvikalpam. And then he is one. There are not many. He is only one. Untouched by nature. That means completely detached from the idea, I am the body and I am the mind. Because body and mind are these are evolutes of nature. But that pure consciousness principle is not an evolute. It is the cause of all this evolution. It is uncaused cause. The eternal image of bliss. You will have to meditate upon, contemplate upon Sri Ramakrishna as an eternal image of bliss. What is our condition? Eternal image of worry, stress, unhappiness. But when you contemplate on Sri Ramakrishna, what are you contemplating? He is unchanging. He is an embodiment of bliss. If you can meditate upon Sri Ramakrishna as an embodiment of bliss, then what are you really contemplating upon? Forget about Ramakrishna. What are you meditating upon? Bliss. If you are thinking of bliss, then what do you become? Bliss. And that's what we want. That is the Sat Chit Ananda is condensed in this. Sat means what? He is eternally present everywhere. Chit means what? He is the principle of consciousness. Ananda means he is the principle of the bliss. Absolute existence, absolute knowledge, absolute bliss. This is what is indicated here in this brief verse. Contemplate upon Ramakrishna in this form. Then what first I mentioned, what is the goal of contemplation? Upasana. He who is contemplating ultimately will become like the object upon which he is contemplating. If we can contemplate upon Ramakrishna like this, then what will happen? Ultimately, we will become like Ramakrishna. And who is Ramakrishna? Forget about this. This is name and form. Not that Ramakrishna. That which is beyond Ramakrishna. The name be that which is beyond the name and the form. Again, we are forgetting. That's why I mentioned Omkara symbol. Bhu, Bhuha, Svaha. Forget about it. Where do they merge? In A, U and Ma. Where do these A, U and Ma merge? In In the fourth inaudible symbol of the Omkara. Inaudible means what? Not that we are deaf. Inaudible means that which is beyond name, form, qualities. Turiya avastha. It is called Turiya. The indescribable. The fourth. It is not fourth in the sense. These are three and that is plus one. In the sense, it is indescribable. Beyond mind and speech. This is the technique. It is called Ahangraha Upasana. Every aspirant ultimately has to go through these three. But these are the three stages. In the first stage, with great self-effort, again and again the mind refuses to think. In the second stage, it becomes spontaneous, natural. The mantra springs, the form springs. We acquire the qualities of the object upon which we are meditating. And in the last stage, we meditate upon the reality. Every deity is a reality. Sat, Chit, Ananda, or Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. And ultimately, there comes a time when what Sri Ramakrishna calls God realization, becoming one with the highest reality. So these are very briefly I gave you the techniques that have been used in Vedic times and how these techniques have slightly changed their form, but we are still doing this in the modern times. Only the process is the same, but the names and forms have changed. That's all. Instead of the sun, instead of Indra, instead of Varuna, we are doing it on Rama, Krishna, Allah, Jesus, Buddha, etc. But the ultimate result is the complete union of the individual soul with the highest reality. This, there are, according to our scholars, 32 of these contemplations vidyas, most important, there are many, but 32 most important vidyas have been indicated in our Vedas. So the first part was ritualistic part, the second part was the contemplative or upasana, and the last part is called Jnana Kanda, a knowledge portion, which is represented by the Upanishads. In my next class, I will take up what are these Upanishads, how many are there, and they form the foundation of Hinduism itself. Very briefly, I will try to finish it and then move further on.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.